Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
All right, welcome to month two of 2025. First month went great. Everything's terrible.
Are you sure this is month two?
It might be month 700.
2000.
Yeah.
I feel like this is kind of one of those, I don't know, fire pits, the boom tube kind of TARDIS effect.
Yeah.
Things are longer.
Maybe we're in a Groundhog Days type scenario, and this is the 500th time we've lived this.
It's possible.
500, five times, 500 times, there's no way to be sure.
Right.
I don't recommend it, is all I'm saying.
No. At any rate, it is February now.
Yeah.
We did get past the first level.
Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow, so we're screwed for more winter.
What winter?
Oh, it's coming.
I think there is supposed to be one or two last gasps.
As Sean Bean said, winter is coming.
But now that we've gone through the weather...
Nick, you said Sean Bean. My head went to Mr. Bean, and I was trying to think what Mr. Bean had him talking about weather.
We don't talk about Mr. Bean. Mr. Bean's not cool.
But also Mr. Bean doesn't talk. He's a pure visual comedian.
He's a guy who just makes funny faces.
As Mr. Bean said, funny face.
Yeah, good point. All right. It is a weird week. There's a little bit of... We have like one TV show to talk about, but it's a good TV show we all liked.
Yeah.
We have two bits of news, but they're both big news.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's not a lot of comics to talk about, but we liked a couple books quite a bit this week. And there's not a lot of games, but one of the big game releases is this week. So it's like we're narrow but explosive.
Oh, I like this.
Wow, I didn't know we were going to be workshopping hype for ourselves.
I don't know.
So by the way, Randy, you're being so secretive about this, but yes, we're going to talk about the Fantastic Four trailer.
Yes, we are.
I'm just going to reveal it up front, because if I were listening, I might be like, I could skip this one.
I think Dave posted that in our group thread at like 4 in the morning or 5 in the morning.
Yeah,
somewhere in there.
Weird.
I watched it at like 8. Yep. We will be talking about that. Game-wise this week, the only thing to note about, we got a restock of Magic Commander decks.
Yep.
We have Bloomborough, Murders of Karlov Manor, Outlaw Thunder Junction, the Western one.
Yep.
And I believe we previously had the Fallout ones.
We have a couple Fallouts, and we've got a couple of Modern Horizons 3.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for Commander decks.
Yeah, we have starter decks from
Magic
again. We even have starter decks from Bloomborough, a couple of actual starter decks.
True.
Get your squirrel on.
People love the squirrels.
We also got a big restock of our D&D minis.
Yes.
Like the biggest we've had in months and months and months. And this is not the pre-painted ones, but the unpainted ones.
Right.
So, if you've been looking to, build up your monsters, you know, create a new character and get a cool mini for it, options have increased.
I believe
if you need Mind Flayers and Hobgoblins, and we've been restocked on it. We've also been stocked on the new D&D book.
Yes.
That features these creatures prominently.
The Monster Manual is now out.
Yep.
Which means that the core books are back all in print, the new versions.
Yeah, it's nice to have them all three again.
Yeah.
We have, as we podcast, we have limited cover. I don't know if that's going to be true by the time the podcast is out.
Right. It is up in the air.
For the record, we ordered a lot more of these than we got.
Yep.
They allocated us.
Yep.
We still got a good number. Like, we will have copies of the book, but that alt cover is going to go fast.
Yeah.
So hopefully, if you want it, you pre-ordered it or get in real quick.
And the alt cover is very cool. It has Mind Flayer.
It is. And it's just a cool design.
The main cover has beholders.
Does it have specifically Xanathar?
It might be Xanathar.
Did you know that Minsk and Boo were on it?
What? No, I didn't see Minsk and Boo.
I did not see it at first, but somebody showed it to me. I'm holding it up. You, the viewers, can't see this, but there they are.
That's true.
Oh, look at that. It is Minsk and Boo fighting a beholder.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yep. Fighting Xanathar, perhaps.
Now, is it sad that Minsk is just throwing Boo at a giant beholder?
No, that's what Boo's life is like. Go for the eyes, Boo. That's his thing.
The beholder is the ultimate target.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, that's true.
Go for the eyes. You're going to hit one. All right. Let's talk about comics for the week.
Okay.
I caught up on Something's Killing the Children this weekend.
Yep.
Which made it the perfect time for this new book, Book of Cutter.
Yep.
Which is a single issue, but it's a big boy. It's like a $10 prestige format.
Yeah,
you know,
it looks like a little graphic novel.
This is a more exploration into the House of Cutter.
Nick, is any of this reprints?
No.
Or is this all original?
Yep, original stuff. So they did this for one of the other sects.
Dave is not as caught up on Something Killjoy as I have been just recently. And he asked, "Is this like the faith of the Something Killer?"
Yeah, right. A renegade slayer.
And I was like, you know, it's not one to one, but that's a shortcut.
The main cutter that we've seen in the Something
Killer,
she was
a psycho British woman.
She is a horrible, horrible version of Faith. Mm-hmm. Basically, no redeeming qualities whatsoever.
Right. You mean horrible? Yeah. Not horribly written, but like just a really terrible person.
Yeah, she's a
murderess.
Yes.
Faith was a murderess too.
No, but Faith was a murderess by accident.
Right.
This woman killed someone on the plane because they were talking shit at her.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all been there.
She bullseyed a person.
Yes, she bullseyed a person.
Yeah, she's a creepy character, but she was a good foil for...
She really was. She was a
and
great...
And so is this person the star of this?
No, because that person is not in this book.
Okay.
But this the houses of the monster, the Order of St. George, the Monster Hunter organization, mm-hmm. House of Slaughter is the one that Erica Slaughter, the lead of Something's Killing the Children, comes from.
Mm-hmm.
This is the House of Cutter, which is the British, one of the British houses.
Yep.
And so this has stories about the characters and also... some like journal pages and stuff detailing the history of the organization.
And it's all Tinian? It's not like, does he have guest people on any of this?
I feel like there might be some guests. No, it's all written by Tinian.
Yeah, okay. It's all.
That's good.
Yeah, there was the House of Slaughter, like the pre book that's written by somebody else. The same guy who's writing the Green Lantern Dark. But
for people who have never read Something Is Killing the Children at all, Randy or Nick, how would y'all.
You'd be very confused.
Kind of. No. Rather just how would y'all pitch that if somebody's like, oh, this sounds kind of interesting, like a darker, kind of more R-rated Buffy, at least in some underpinnings.
Like Something's Killing the Children?
Yeah, just the premise of
that?
The overall series.
Yeah, the usual pitch I give is it's sort of a darker Buffy.
Yeah. And we know that, you know, Tinian has a particularly good handle on characters. Does this still have that kind of those trademark elements?
Erica Slaughter is a very interesting layered character.
More
so.
Action adventure or more horror?
More horror.
Horror.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. The monsters are particularly creepy.
Anyway, Book of Cutter. If you've been reading Something's Killing the Children, this is a good add-on.
Yeah. Agreed.
We got Silverhawks number one. Another nostalgia property. A lot of them are coming back.
Yep.
This one had a guitar playing cowboy.
It did. You know, back in the day, I kind of thought that was a bit much, but I kind of... now I feel like I appreciate him a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
I found some country music I like, and maybe this guy listens to that country music.
I was a big fan of the villain Buzz Saw.
Yeah.
I was a big green guy that had giant...
Buzz Saw for
he had, like, seven. He had, like, weird ones on his shoulders and his wrists. It was... He was a constant villain in... Pretty much any of my like action figure games.
Oh, you had the figure?
Oh yeah, the figure was amazing.
So for people though who didn't see it, this was like around the same time of Thundercats, and I believe a lot of the same producers on it. Like Thundercats, it had like a really dope opening, and the animation in a given episode wasn't quite as up to par. But
they spent all their budget on their opening thing.
It's a good opening.
Yeah.
But yeah, they had like these kind of organic metallic, you know how they used to do Iron Man's armor back in the day.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But they're all silver, and there was like a dude, like a traditional 80s hero type dude. There was a cute chick lady. There was a little kid with a red nose who was like a little imp. I don't know what the deal was with him. There was the cowboy, and there must have been one more.
So do you think the guy who, I don't know who created Darkhawk, but do you think he got kind of like a visual idea?
Almost
certainly. Mike Manley was the artist. I forget who the writer was who created Darkhawk.
Because, I mean, their helmets look eerily similar to Darkhawk.
Yeah,
that is true.
What little, I haven't read this, but just skimming through it, I see that basically it looks like over a century has passed since the original time of the Silverhawks, and I think the idea is that they kind of cleaned up their era. They put away the worst of the worst criminals and succeeded, but now the big bad Monstar gets
Monstar's gang of criminals.
And like all the criminals that are in that prison escape, and they're trying to put the band back together. I think there's like people have heightened lifespans, so you're gonna live well past 100.
Yeah.
But they're like past their prime. They're oldsters, and it looks like they were gonna maybe train the next generation of them.
Uh huh.
But then there was something that looked like, I was like, oh wait, did one of them get enyoungened on the last page or two? But previously you saw like what I thought was all five of them were, and I think like only the kid now, he's like, I'm ready to do this, let's fight, because he's like, you know, he's like normal age,
sure,
but everybody else is like old. But I don't know. It looked interesting, and they are, it looks like, gonna sort of incorporate all the stuff that happened on the cartoon and then find some new adventures that are gonna take place after.
Yeah. Okay.
It's cool.
I know some people have already been very excited about this. I've seen some people come in very excited, yeah, about it. All right. We have Power Man Timeless, which is one of the weirder concepts I've seen. This is a, like, alternate future Luke Cage who has the power of the Sentry and the Hulk and Iron Fist. And he's battling these, like, cosmic villains. If you're a big fan of Luke Cage, that's really nice art by Bernard Chang.
You know, every once in a while, Randy, there's those weird comic projects that we've plugged into.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether
for sure.
It's the Mike Allred Superman and Batman,
yeah,
ones,
which is both just as weird as this.
Absolutely bizarre.
Yep.
And I don't know quite what inspires the company sometimes to jump at these projects.
Some writer pitched it, and they were like, sure.
Is there any explanation of how he gets the Sentry's powers?
It was in a previous Timeless
issue.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
There was an explanation. It's not in here.
Okay.
Anyway, weird, but, you know, if you're a big
it
Luke Cage
be
fan.
Your weird thing.
Or a big Sentry fan or a big Iron Fist fan.
Jackson Lansing.
Lansing and Kelly.
Okay.
We have Star Wars Legacy of Vader by Charles Soule and Luke Ross. This is basically
Kylo Ren,
right?
Yep. Yeah, from what I could tell, it looks like it's set after, what's that dude, Hux?
Yes.
At some point, I kind of forget this, but in that, what they call the sequel trilogy,
yep,
he gets offed, and I guess it becomes, like, all Ren's show or then, and yeah. Oh, and, like, Snoke is dead, too.
Yep.
Like, he was there. Like, didn't he help kill him?
Yes, that's the whole thing in this. He's like, yes, Skywalker, or Rey killed him, but he leaves out that he actually helped her kill him.
What a jerk.
I really have to say that Luke Ross's artwork is nice.
Was Luke Ross the guy who did Way of the Rat way
he
back
was?
When?
No. Well, yes, I think he was.
A really good cross-gen, yes, martial arts comic.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this explores him trying to, like, come into his own as a bigger power. And I know that at least as part of it, he goes on, like, a sort of pilgrimage to Vader's fortress on Mustafar,
yep,
to, I don't know, commune with him, find his hidden treasure chest,
yes,
whatever it
correct.
Is. Maybe he's like, if I sleep in his bed, I will become Vader.
I think that's probably what it is. I think that's very likely.
He will sleep on his bed of pain. Maybe if I go in his mask put-on chamber.
is that what it's called?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I must retire to my mask put-on chamber.
Yeah, sure.
I guess.
We've got a reprint of Batman Long Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
The first issue of that gets a reprint. Really nice Tim Sale artwork on
yeah,
this.
Yeah, you kind of forget how good it is. Are they going to reprint the full series?
I believe so. I'm not positive on this
okay.
one.
I think the sign I made for it said that it is. So if I'm lying, just
you
so y'all
lied.
Know.
You might have lied.
I don't think
your sign is lying. I think I remember DC saying that they were reprinting it.
That seems plausible.
It seems possible.
We also have a big reprint of Ultimate Universe 1 year in. This is the introduction of Ultimate Wolverine. And also the, like, Nick Fury talking to the council about what's been going on in the Ultimate Universe.
Yeah, a lot of people have been looking for this.
Yep.
I didn't know that I'd forgotten that they were going to reprint it, so
yeah.
That's handy.
And then we got a reprint of All New Venom number 1, and we have All New Venom number 2, so if you've not read this book, which I finally caught up on, it's good, and we've got one and yep. two back in.
By the way, also a weird book.
Also a weird book.
Like, a Venom book where it's a mystery as to who
you
he
don't
is.
You know who Venom is. Yep.
B, they have, like, four particular candidates
yep.
that they're really putting out there, and I'm trying to decide, like, if they say, like, oh, it's not any of them, I'm like, is it going to feel like a whodunit where the murderer is, in fact, somebody who was never in the story?
What if the murderer is you?
What if the murderer is the Watcher? I don't know.
I also appreciate that they're doing cool things with Venom and his abilities. It's not... Everything is kind of unique about it. It doesn't,
right.
doesn't feel like a Venom we've seen before.
Well, yeah, again, you know, I when we talked about this initially, I reminded people Al Ewing is the guy who wrote the very popular but also unusual Immortal Hulk run
yep.
that, you know, had its, you know... what do you call it?
Green Door, weird horror.
Yeah, what I was going to say is Cronenberg-esque, yeah, body horror and stuff like that. So he's an unpredictable guy, but a good writer, and he's doing something different.
I was going to say, this does not have body horror.
It does not. It does not. Yeah, he's not a one-trick pony.
Nope. No. He's a... he's like a jokester a little bit. It's a little more Spider-Man-y almost.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, y'all have been singing its praises. So since we got number one back in, I read it. My new theory, Dave, we've talked about Dave's theory.
I think so. Have we?
I'm sure we have.
Probably so.
We should revisit. Back in the 80s, there was a comic called...
Team America.
Team America.
Yes, this was one of their weird kind of crossover appeal attempts at Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they had a character where there was, like, a super football guy, too.
NFL Super Pro.
Yep.
Dave, this came up in my history, in my memories that you and I were debating whether or not there was any cosplay of NFL Super Pro, and I was correct that there was.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it seems like there should be, but then I was like, I'd never seen it. So Team America was like a team of stunt cyclists, like that traveled around and had, you know, actually they didn't have adventures, but then they started having adventures, you know, they had like kind of like a unique look. It was almost a little bit like G.I. Joe meets Evel Knievel or Stunt Riders or
sure.
whatever, and that each one of them like had like, oh, there's the tough guy mechanic and there's the. You know, the guy who can do all the coolest stunts, and each one of them had a different thing. But when they started having adventures in the Marvel Universe,
yes,
the one common thing that turned up every few issues was there was this kind of dude who looked sort of like Snake Eyes on a motorcycle
yep.
called the Marauder.
The Marauder.
And he would come in, and he never spoke, and he would, like, kick ass. And he was, it was a badass, but it was a mystery. And ultimately, it was revealed that the very reason that the thing with him... And the whole reason Team America was created was because, like decades past, Hydra had done some sort of experiment on, like, a group of kids and given them this some sort of power that wouldn't come into its own until, like, they were adults. And they would be, like, drawn together. They would, you know, find their paths crossing each other. And they could, like, I'm butchering this a little bit, and I don't remember even what the exact plot was. But they could, when there was danger, one of them would take on a sort of... a persona that was like a protector kind of thing,
yep,
or an Avenger,
yep.
a.k.a. The Marauder. And so the deal was that they were, in fact, they didn't realize, but the Marauder at various times was different members of the group who would like kind of like, they would sort of mentally summon him without really knowing they were doing it.
Yep.
And
we do that all the time.
He'd come in and kick ass, but he was the sum of their mental energies, sort of, and I don't know, and weird Hydra stuff.
Yep.
He was a gestalt hero. And so, what my theory is, in all new Venom, we've seen once the premise got revealed and they said who the candidates were, which are Rick Jones, Robbie Robertson mm-hmm. from the Daily Bugle,
yep.
Luke Cage,
yep.
and Madame Mask,
yep.
the villain from like Iron Man and stuff like
yep.
that. The three people who aren't Madame Mask have like have kind of been meeting and trying to figure out. Well, we know it's one of us, and all of them are like, "Well, I know it's not me." Well, I know it's not me, and I'm like, "Huh, that's interesting." But it happens when you're together, you know. It seems like a little like this Team America thing, and I feel like Al Ewing's interest in this book is not so much in like the idea of like with all the existing Venom lore. He seems to be interested in the people who are trying to figure out the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking that it would make a certain amount of sense because Al Ewing has done some deep dives in his stuff before. Like he's referenced some obscure things in his Avengers books and stuff. That the Hydra tech behind Team America... And I'm not saying there's about to be a bunch of motorcyclists in this.
They're called Thunder Riders now because Team America became a...
It's a little too cheeseball.
One World Police.
Oh, right, yeah.
So they call them Thunder
Riders
now.
I should have clarified. It has nothing to do with the South Park thing.
No.
Yeah. But anyway, I think what he wants to do is turn it into a book where these people meet together and they're like, how can we use Venom to do some good? And you have, like, old school Robbie Robertson, the guy who's been around and seen a lot. You're going to have Madame Mask, I think, in this ultimately saying villainous things. And she's like, I'm a planner too, but I know I hit harder. And, you know, I'm like, I'm all about, like, tough strikes. Luke Cage, you know, quintessential good guy hero, but also a bit of a tough guy. Rick Jones, young Turk, who's knows all the heroes. It's an interesting combination, and I think they're going to be essentially like the Venom Council. If my crazy theory pays off, which it won't.
I do enjoy this theory. I have two things.
Yes.
My theory, having now read it, is that it's some fifth person they're going to introduce.
They can't. It's a whodunit. You can't do that.
I bet they do. They're like, oh, it wasn't one of us. This guy was in the courtroom the whole time. Right. And issue five they'll show it all from that guy's point of view, and we'll see. It'll reframe the entire thing.
It is possible. It is possible. They haven't explicitly said this is a whodunit. There's a lot of things like that, but it could be something like that. And what's your number two?
The other thing, Dave, is do you remember 1982? By the way, is when Team America came about. They showed up in Captain America. In Captain America 269 as Team America.
Oh, so that was before they got their own book. They were in Captain America. Yes. Interesting.
In 1983, May 1983,
yeah,
there was another book.
Okay.
Did not feature motorcyclists.
Okay.
It did feature a big old truck.
US-1.
US-1. So I looked that up just to see kind of when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
US-1, 12-issue run of books. Al Milgrom...
By the way, that's about the same length as Team America.
Famous, I think, inker and writer and artist wrote it. And Herb Trimp from G.I. Joe did the art. U.S. Archer was Ulysses Solomon Archer. He was a trucker who got implants put in him so he could control his truck. But what I'd forgotten, Dave, is that Mary McGill, waitress at the Shortstop Diner, had an alternate personality, the villainous Midnight, who used a mind-controlling bullwhip.
Uh-huh.
And also... Jefferson Archer, the highwayman, was U.S.'s brother who turned to evil.
Okay.
And also that Baron von Blimp, a villain based off a dirigible, was in there.
Wow.
This is all on Wikipedia.
Are you saying that this has something to do with All New Venom, Randy?
No. Okay. I don't think that a mind-controlling bullwhip was used to turn someone into All New Venom.
You don't think that we're going to find out that it was actually Ulysses Archer?
I don't think Baron von Blimp is going to turn up. But.
Then why am I even reading it?
All right, besides the only Venom, besides those reprints, we did also...
But yes, it's a rare case, because, you know, we're not the biggest Venom fans.
No.
Although we've liked stuff from Donny Cates and stuff. He did some good stuff. But this is a rare case where we would generally recommend this Venom book.
Yeah, agreed. For sure. Yeah, I think we all do. The other thing I was going to mention is that we had the Absolute Superman number 4 this week, which I think we all enjoyed.
Yeah.
Great issue.
Very good issue. There's an interesting structure to it where they recur... it's a recurring thing where they're interviewing people who Superman has saved.
Yeah.
Yep.
And because this is a very different Superman, a more anti-authority... and explicitly sort of progressive man of the people kind of guy... you know, I'm often frustrated when, like, Bendis or Tom King do the page of interviews, because they always seem to do the kind of novelty version of it.
Yeah.
But this is, like, the more sincere version where it's, like, when they're talking, they're actually saying interesting things and not just, like, you know, stuff that's meant to be kind of pop.
I thought Aaron's Lois Lane is a really interesting character.
Yes. I'm honestly her
relationship
dad
with her father
is scary in this. Like, he's always meant to be like this kind of over the top military guy.
Yeah.
But the way they kind of framed it, show it in this, Jason Aaron's specific writing for him when he's talking to Lois, you know, you talking about like his experiences in the military and how he's like, you know, he never like says bleeding heart type stuff.
Right.
But he's clearly that's like disgusts him. He says, fear's a hell of a lot safer point man than trust every time. That's what he lives by.
Yep.
There's a new team that is shown in here that I thought
that
was
references a classic DC idea.
Yep. Yep.
It's a cool idea.
I think we can say that another Superman supporting character shows
up. Yeah, in a very cool way.
In a very cool way. And
also it's fleshing out kind of the broader universe a little bit, too, because we get more about the Peacemakers.
Yeah.
Which there's a specific character, but...
I think we can say this guy like seems like he's got, like, PTSD.
Yeah.
And is like, what do you call it? When something is going to explode, what do you say? What's the metaphor that I always use? A ticking time bomb. Yeah, this dude's a ticking time bomb.
Superman does appear in this, and he does badass things.
He does.
This is a really good issue that kind of fleshes out the broader universe, I felt.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. But yeah, this continues to vie with me, along with Wonder Woman for my favorite. I think Wonder Woman is still my favorite, but... But I'm loving the vibe on this.
Aaron is killing it with this one.
And then we got an Avengers issue, which is the second part of their heist. They're trying to steal something from the Grandmaster, but they're running up against another heist team that is Black Cat and Kang.
Yeah. And you might be saying, as Nick was when he was looking for it, well, you were flipping through it, and you're like, why is she fighting Kang? She's going to lose. And I was like, no, she's working with Kang.
Yeah.
And... there is a reason for it.
I was going to say, that led to...
That's the story.
A bigger question. I'm like, why would Black Cat work with Kang?
Yep. There's a story
there's a good
it.
And I thought a really good one. Jed McKay really gets this character.
Yep.
It was
fun. He's the only person who should be allowed to write Black Cat.
Correct.
From now on.
Yes. All right. And then there's a couple graphic novels. Well, one graphic novel and some novels.
I've got one or two single issues to mention. Well, actually, you know, just one.
Okay.
The final issue of Batman Offworld.
Right.
Jason Aaron book, where Batman, basically, he got in the first issue, his ass utterly kicked by an alien enforcer.
Yep.
And it's portraying a time early on in his career when that was the first time that had happened to him. And
not like now, when he's had his ass kicked numerous times by various aliens.
And in a somewhat novelty premise, he's like, I need to get into, you know, one of the experimental Wayne Tech ships that, you know, with its experimental hyperdrive, and I need to go into space, and I need to learn how to deal with this stuff.
Let's try this again.
And, fast forward through him getting captured, put on a, like, alien prison, breaking out of that, leading a revolt on that, and now getting involved in almost like a... not as full Star Wars-esque rebellion, but like bigger, much bigger stuff than him, while having brought into the fold the training robot, which has been very fun, that he trained with, and a Tamaranian? Tamarian?
Yeah.
How do you say what Starfire's people are?
I believe.
Tamaran.
Is it a Tamaran?
I don't know.
Is it a Tamaranian? Let's say Tamaranian.
Pomeranian.
It's a Pomeranian. Anyway, she is like a kind of a tough merc who's kind of been swayed by Batman's thinking, because this is, it's funny, there's some grit to this. There's some edge and like some badass fight scenes in every issue too, as Batman tries to find, you know, ways to take down people whose tech and physical forms are like generally way beyond the stuff he would fight on Earth. But he's learning to do it, and he's also got like his own teched up suit and stuff before all is said and done. But there is a certain bit of heart to it, to all of this, and Batman philosophy of, you know, helping at all costs, that's kind of started to win her over, it actually comes to a pretty good conclusion.
I forgot that was drawn by Doug Mankey.
Yep. Doug Mankey, who did a lot of great Green Lantern stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, so I think that was it for me this week.
We've got the new Marvel Premiere Collections.
Oh, yep. Right, these are like... similar to DC's Digest,
they're taking on the compact editions. Yeah,
yeah,
they're a little more. I think they're $15 instead.
They're
right.
$14.99.
Yeah,
but good stuff.
The first one is Daredevil: Born Again, and the other one is Black Panther: Nation Under Our Feet. These are good little. If you've been enjoying the compact editions, it's a good way to get into a lot of classic DC. Marvel's been putting these out. There's a new Fantastic Four one coming.
I mean, it is the best Daredevil story.
Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
It's dark, yeah. It's depressing.
It's not a good first one, because it's kind of like about how Kingpin destroys his life when he finds out his identity, and how that plays out. And it's also got a great subplot going on with, like, Foggy Nelson, critique of, I guess I would say, United States Special Ops in the form of Nuke, the...
Yep.
Pill popping, you know, addict of a evil Rambo, basically.
Like, this guy need a red pill or a blue pill?
Yeah. Yep. It's there's some sequences in this. It always reminded me of a Martin Scorsese movie. Like,
let's see that.
There is some kind of really tough violence in it. Randy, do you remember the scene where there's like a shootout at the police station where Kingpin sends somebody to kill a witness? And it turns out, like that guy has, like, protection, but, like, one of the Kingpin's got a cop on the take, and everybody starts pulling guns, and Ben Urich has to grab something and, like, kill a dude by beating him with a gun.
I had forgotten this.
Man, it is like such an intense scene. It's one of the best action scenes and suspense scenes I've ever seen in a comic. Very brutal and violent. And Urich is also an important character in this, yep, for sure. But yeah, I think it's some peak Frank Miller writing. So, for sure.
And then we got the classic Dragonlance Chronicles.
Yeah, this is actually the prose collections, the three books that make up their original trilogy. Just like Star Wars all comes together with three, so does this.
I've never read this, but I know Dave holds it in high regard.
Yep.
And
let's rewind high regard just for a
second.
You've
never read this?
No, I've never read it.
But you know, like, that was an 80s kid.
Yeah,
thing,
yeah, I'm just
kind of surprised. 90s kids don't
necessarily. I've read a bit of the Dritzed ones. Yeah. I've read, like, the first, yeah, like, three or four of the Dritzed.
Well, that's Dungeons & Dragons, but not Dragonlance.
No, I know.
It's its own world, Nick.
I know.
The world of Kryn.
But a while back, you, when I was doing custom action figures, you made, you had a request of doing Tanis, a half-elf.
Yeah.
Which is one of the main characters of this book, yep, series.
The guy who always looks like he should be a ranger, but is his stats are fighter. But a fighter can use a bow. probably anybody who was playing D&D or who read those books in the early 80s, it almost inevitably left a big impression because these were popular fantasy that with a much more lively cast than Tolkien had,
yeah,
you know, overall. It reminded me almost of the X-Men, where they would kind of like, they were a little bit more edgy. They would bicker with each other, but they were also pretty badass and stuff, too. And what else was sort of notable in it? Amazing cover artwork from Larry Elmore. Like, his costume designs on them are still, mm-hmm, like a D&D peak. Now, at the same time, I recognize that this writing is not going to hold up for everyone. But I think if you can kind of put yourself in your, like, 12-year-old mindset,
yeah,
it's a pretty good read. And ultimately has people with riding dragons and stuff.
Sounds cool to me.
Yeah, and lances.
They do. You know, the original thing was they were like playtesting the module, yeah, mm-hmm, and they based the book on like the role playing the sessions that they had. That was like, I think, for the first book, and then for the second and third book, it was all kind of invented, but.
Yeah.
But I know originally it was like, this was their campaign.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break, then we're going to come back and talk about Fantastic Four and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Okay, so let's talk about that Fantastic Four trailer.
All right, let's do it.
Dave, you were just asking, was it last week?
Yes, I was like...
You're like, where's the Fantastic Four trailer? And yeah, here it is.
It felt like it's getting awfully close as a movie for there to have been nothing yet.
Well, they waited, Dave. They waited for February 4th. F4.
Okay.
Looking for some...
That's Fast and Furious 4.
Oh, yeah,
They have copyrighted anything with an F in it.
But this movie is also about family.
It is true. All right, so let's talk about it. I think we kind of already knew that it looked like it was set in the 60s.
Yeah.
But like, this seems like, is it?
It's kind of like a retro.
Is it an alternate world?
It clearly is not the MCU.
No, it
can't
not
be.
No, it is an alternate.
Yeah, I think it's an alternate world, but I believe they're going to use multiverse to like bring them into like Secret Wars and that kind of thing.
Right.
Or Galactus is going to eat their Earth and they're going to have to escape into the MCU. Which would be
that's pretty dark.
They're
going to
come back and like, we failed.
We failed and hate our world.
Like, billions died.
I can see all these worlds getting smashed together, and that's what, mm-hmm, causes.
So this is a fairly short trailer.
Less than 2 minutes.
And they call this the teaser, essentially.
Yeah. And it begins with what looks like an interview with them at the Baxter Building, probably.
Yeah.
Where there's a guy in there, and Pedro Pascal as Reed, mm-hmm, is saying the first thing he says is he's like, we have dinner each Sunday night,
every family dinner.
Yeah, family dinner, 7 o'clock.
Seven o'clock on the dot.
No matter what.
And there's just kind of a vibe of like, these people like each other. They are family.
And there's a little cake that's arising out of the counter like a 70s automat.
Oh, right, right.
There's definitely like some of that. You know, you remember the House of the Future stuff? Like there's a cartoon that the Warner Bros. Did.
Yep.
They definitely feels like this is the 50s version of a House of the Future.
Yeah,
kind of
right.
Too.
Or also a little bit like about the kind of alternate timeline of The Incredibles and things like that. We will see Ben Grimm, the Thing, and Herbie prepping some dinner or lunch or whatever.
Yep.
Herbie looks cool because he's got like little sort of 60s tech, like little recorder thing for his eyes.
Yep.
Yeah, that looks very cool, like a great design.
Are you guys a fan of the Thing?
Yes, the Thing looks great.
I think he is perfect.
Yeah,
instead of opening with like the Thing doing like a big old it's clobbering time or whatever, it emphasizes he's just kind of a dude. I'm sure we're going to see he is more than just that.
But making him a cook, which by the way I'm sure is a nod to The Bear.
Yeah.
The guy who is playing him is Everett Moss Backrack from The Bear, which is a show about cooking.
Yeah.
Making him a cook is a nice touch. Him and Herbie being like hit me like just add some more garlic to the sauce.
Him a cook. He's not a cook.
I mean he tastes the sauce and he's like, it needs a little more garlic. That's a cook type thing.
He's cooking.
But I think he's meant to be more of like,
he's going
to
be a chef.
I think he's got some skills as a chef, yeah.
Really?
I think that is built.
But no, they mentioned he's a pilot in this.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying he's a professional chef.
Okay.
I'm saying he may be a guy.
Somebody says, when you say someone's a cook, I think a professional cook.
I think he's going to be on that level, though, as like someone who, he is the person who cooks the dinners and that kind of thing.
Okay,
They're going to make him that.
I would expect them to play around a little bit with the dynamic, which has changed over the years in the comics, too, especially with Reed having really started out as that kind of very patriarchal 60s guy who would kind of order people around a little
you've
bit.
You've got to put him and Sue more on equal footing, and I'm glad they seem to be doing that.
And you need to, I think, show that. I think the aloof genius is a thing that's kind of worn out its welcome. People are like, we're going to maybe stop excusing people being assholes and stuff like that.
Are we? Are we going to elevate them to the highest office in the land without a vote?
All right. Good people.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about the good people in the world, Randy, had decided that. And so the FF have evolved over the years. It is funny, though. People will sometimes take Reed back, and they will go a little bit more retro with him.
Yeah.
But this pleasantly seems to be a Reed who's, like, you'd want to hang out with.
Yes,
he seems like he's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And
they're Johnny. We don't see a lot of, but he looks like a goofball. Looks fun.
Then we see that like, a glimpse of them in their astronaut suits, and they look like the Mercury sort of astronauts, but it's all got the color scheme of, like, Fantastic Four stuff in it. And it's interesting. There's a kind of a neat bit where Reed is talking about like what before they went up and we know got their powers.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, you weren't invisible to Sue, and he's like, the Thing, Ben wasn't a rock, and Johnny didn't burst into flames or whatever. And then she's like, well, Johnny, you know, like the Thing was always a rock, and she's talking, of course, metaphorically about like, you know, he was always like the shoulder or, you know, whatever. He was the heart.
But it was clever.
It was very clever. It was well done.
Yeah, it's a neat thing because it's kind of a stirring, you know, affirming sort of moment, and gave you that sense of that family thing going on there.
What do they say? Johnny is always Johnny.
Yeah.
there's no plot really shown in this. No key plot elements. But we do see that the adventurous thing starting to take place. We see them drive. Is that their car?
I believe that might be the Fantastic Car.
Yeah, which looks like a souped up slicker sci-fi version
it
of like a 60s.
It kind of looks like one of the Batmobiles in a lot of like
does,
kind of the retro Batmobile.
But it's more like glimmering blue than
I guarantee
blue.
You it'll do some transformation and fly.
Right. It's gonna like turn into like the Fantastic Car or something like
I
that.
I imagine.
And but it was a little bit like, you know, when they hit the rocket thing on the Men in Black car.
Yeah.
It had a little bit of that vibe to it.
Also, the music in this trailer is great.
Yep. Is it, in fact, Michael Giacchino?
It probably is. That would make sense.
I think I saw that he was doing this
one.
That
would make sense.
He can do very sort of stirring stuff. I feel like he's going to be a good fit for it.
We get a 2-second glimpse of John Malkovich. I have seen some people speculating that he's like future Reed. Based on like the Earth X, and I think that's crazy. He's Red Ghost. He's clearly Red Ghost.
that's what I heard. But why do you say clearly?
Visually, it looks
like Red Ghost.
Red Ghost.
And also, Red Ghost fits in this retro thing. Like, it makes more sense to do Red Ghost than Super Apes because they were trying to duplicate the Fantastic Four's mission.
Yeah.
And if you do a thing where it starts with Red Ghost trying to become the Fantastic Four, you don't have to redo the origin. You do it with the Red Ghost.
Are you saying that you think that because you don't have Red Ghost without Super Apes?
You gotta have Super Apes.
Yeah, you have to have Super Apes.
But I also,
not that we've heard hide nor hair of that.
I just, yeah, they'll all be CGI.
Sure.
But I just, the idea of him being future Reed is weird because it'd be like a multiversal thing. Because obviously Pedro Pascal is not going to age into John Malkovich.
Probably not.
I think it is a weird offbeat idea that he might be anyone other than the Red Ghost.
The fact that he had like kind of like a like beard in it, whereas the Red Ghost has usually just had like white hair, but I don't think he usually has a beard or anything. Mm. He didn't immediately register to me as Red Ghost.
That's wishful we'll thinking, see. But I'm hoping it is Red Ghost because I think that's a fun and interesting villain to throw in there.
Well, I would love it if they.
I don't really want kind of like future time travel. We'll see.
We're about to get to Big G Galactus, which is glimpsed at the end. I hope that there's like some sequences or a montage or something that shows some of the other FF villains.
There is a rumor that Mole Man is that what's his name, Paul Waterhauser?
Yeah,
that he's playing Mole Man.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's somebody
I don't know
else.
Who that is, but by the way, Paul Giamatti should have played the
Paul Waterhauser is, he's Stingray from Cobra Kai, among other things.
Okay, yeah.
He'd be great casting.
We also have Natasha Lyonne, which we don't know.
Natasha Lyonne, we don't know who she's playing. Like, I think there may be a lot of FF villains in this.
I would like it. That'd be cool.
But yes, the big one is, we see Galactus, he's not a cloud.
Thank God.
He's a man with a big helmet.
But there is a point where they look up and they see, like, flames coming down over the sky, which I believe...
But that's from that's in the comics, yeah.
Right, but... To people who remember Galactus as a cloud.
You're saying it was a little PTSD.
For just a second, I was like, why are they doing that? But then, yes, you do glimpse, I guess, the shadow of his very iconic helmet crossing the city, I think.
Yep.
And then you briefly do see him from behind with the Statue of Liberty dwarfed by him in the foreground, just to give you a sense of the crazy scale.
It's going to be voiced by Ralph Ineson, who is a fantastic actor. He was the doctor in Nosferatu.
Oh, okay, interesting, yeah.
He's got that kind of different type of voice.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be good for a god, essentially.
It's still weird to me to have Galactus in their first outing, but because they can kind of build this from the ground up and do what they want with that story... I'm interested.
If they've shown that the FF have been around for a while, which it looks like that's what they're going with
right.
in this world, having Galactus show up, I think, makes a little bit more sense.
A little bit.
I thought it was a wonderful trailer.
It is a really good trailer.
Makes me super excited, and we don't have long to wait.
It's July.
Is it July? It's not May?
No. July.
That's still
everything
not...
sucks.
May is Thunderbolts, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Actually, I'm super excited for that too.
Me too.
So, you know,
This is going to be a great year for Marvel movies.
We're getting Cap.
Literally nothing else
but Marvel movies.
But yeah, that was exciting. Well, I don't know if... Did we have on our list that we're going to talk about Spidey-Man?
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I wasn't sure if that was...
I just thought all the effects looked good. Thing looked good.
Yeah,
Human Torch
agreed.
Looked good.
It all looks good.
Sue's force fields looked really cool.
Yep.
We haven't seen Reed's. That was the only thing they kept hidden. So.
Yeah, and I think maybe they were like, that's a little bit much to throw at people in the first trailer.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some reason they don't want to just show it immediately. I don't know.
Maybe. I hope he has the springy sound effect like in the 60s cartoons.
What if, and hear me out here... In the first X-Men movie, when Anna Paquin asks Wolverine, she's like, does it hurt when you pop your claws? And he's like, every time. And then it's like all angsty and sad.
You think Reed should scream?
I think he's like, every time he's doing it, internal organs being crushed and reformed.
Oh, man.
Shut up and make a parachute, Reed.
go!
Nobody wants to hear it, Reed.
I'll float you down. Oh, God. Yeah, anyway, that's my theory.
True body horror.
I don't think it's probably as accurate as my possible Team America theory, but I just wanted to put it out there.
Yep.
That's the reason they didn't show it.
Dave out here floating theories.
Too disturbing.
Too much body horror movie
in disguise.
Yeah. You know, Josh Trank, that was the movie he made, was the body horror Fantastic Four.
It was awful.
Yeah.
I never saw that one.
No, me neither.
I press play.
All right.
I regret it.
The other big news is that the Buffy the Vampire Slayer reboot, which I didn't even notice was still happening. This has been
either.
Bubbling in the background. It is almost greenlit.
I heard something a few weeks ago where somebody asked Sarah Michelle Gellar, like, oh, would you do that? And she was kind of like generically enthusiastic. She's like, I don't know that anything will, you know, is happening with it. She's like, but would I do it? You know, do I think there's a good story could come out of it? And she was like, I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's very likely.
Do we know anybody involved?
So here's what we know.
Okay.
It is the showrunners of Poker Face, which is a great show.
Yeah, fantastic show.
Chloe Zhao from The Eternals. But also other things.
I like Chloe Zhao.
That's
she's
the
great.
Director of...
She's directing the pilot. It has been great. The pilot has an official order from Hulu.
It is a sequel to Buffy and so it's not a rebuild?
It is a sequel. So Buffy will be... Sarah Michelle Gellar will appear in a recurring role as Buffy.
Yep.
But she will be maybe mentoring a new Slayer.
Sure. I assume it would be something
which
like
is
that.
A great idea. I'm excited about this idea. I am hit and miss with Buffy, to be honest. I like less than half of it overall, but
I like it all, warts and all.
I really like
same. I'm with Nick, but it definitely made an impact on you once upon a time, and it's what put Whedon on the map
for sure, for good real.
And this will also be without Whedon, I assume.
Yeah, no Whedon.
So that'll be interesting. It's
I wonder if any of the other like. Marty Noxon and
I hope
anybody
not.
Else who worked on it.
Yeah.
Marty Noxon was the poison in that show for me. Yeah. I did not like
it. You wanted to have a fresher voice, Randy?
I would like new people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you would still like the something of the same vibe, I assume?
You know, I don't know. I feel like...
Like
I
it could find its own
it
voice?
It wanted to be its own thing, yeah.
Like the thing that defined, I think, Buffy was a good episodic format,
yeah.
Although it also had a arc to every season.
Yep.
Everybody knows the dialogue was very snappy, and in that Whedon style, could turn very serious in pretty good ways. and a pretty strong list of core characters. You know, when you look at like Xander and Willow and Buffy and Giles and the earliest ones, and even supporting characters like Jenny Calendar and then mm-hmm. Faith and stuff like that. It was mostly winners. And so they do have a little bit, now going back, not everything, like Firefly honestly has aged pretty well. Buffy has aged less well, I would guess.
Well,
it also went longer. It had more opportunities.
Yeah.
We've said this before, but like one of the, it might have been lucky that Firefly didn't go too long.
Yeah.
Well, it's also that every Buffy season was 22 to 23 episodes.
Yep.
Nowadays, that's not a thing anymore.
Right.
So you're definitely going to have to kind of be a little more streamlined.
Right. They're going to be like the big bad. We just found out who they are, and they're going to attack instead of like in a few months. It'll be like next Tuesday. I kind of agree with you, Randy. Though it's worth finding its own voice, but I would say like you do broadly want to have, I think, some of that, some repartee, some cleverness. But like exactly what that looks like to in a modern world, I'm open enough.
Do
you are going to have some vampires in your Vampire Slayer?
Do you get any of the characters to come back?
Here's the thing. I think a lot of these people, like Allison Hannigan, maybe.
Do you want
Brendan? Nicholas
Brendan?
Nicholas
can
Brendan.
Go away.
Yeah,
he's
a creep.
Problematic.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
And Xander is one of the characters that aged somewhat.
But I mean. Michelle Trachtenberg.
Maybe.
David Boreanaz is a little problematic.
Yeah. Spoiler warning, did Spike die in the series?
I don't remember.
Did he finally die?
He was a ghost, but he was still there. He was
I think there's... I have a strong sense that they would want to bring back David Marsters?
Jason Marsters.
Johnny Marsters?
Johnny Marsters.
Ezekiel Marsters.
Ezekiel Marsters, that's it.
Yes.
I don't remember.
James Marsters.
James Marsters.
I know people out there are cringing,
yes.
They're like, please, for the love of God, look something up on Google.
I think you have, Anthony Stewart Head, I would love to see back.
He's still alive.
He's still alive.
He's still alive.
Plays a big part in Ted Lasso.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Ted Lasso, Dave, does not involve anyone being lassoed.
Yeah, I guess any one of those characters would be interesting to see.
Like to see Cordelia again?
Didn't Angel end on the note of like, oh, maybe L.A. is about to be destroyed by demons?
Yeah, but it was clearly they were going to fight it off.
Ride a dragon.
I think it would be interesting if they acknowledged stuff like that. Or, you know, they said like, you know, well, you know, that was 20 years ago. We lost half the city, but we saved half the city, and now it's rebuilt. And, you know, like, or at least if Angel shows up, if they want to get into it.
I don't know if they'll go that deep. I mean, for first season, I bet they'll want to build their own mythology.
Probably so. But
it'd be nice to have little references here and there.
In the finale of Buffy, the many other Slayers were triggered.
Yep.
So there were... I hope at least that's acknowledged. Like, that core bit of mythology, yep. I kind of want to have carry over if it's going to be a sequel at all.
If they decide not to use any of the Dark Horse comics, I'm okay with.
It's probably good not to have Dawn turn into a giant or, like, a centaur or something weird.
It was very weird.
Yeah. Best to not do that.
Yep. All right, let's take a break, and then we'll come back and talk about your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. All right, so there is a new Spider-Man cartoon. It has a weird release schedule. We'll probably talk about it again next week because...
What is the schedule?
Two episodes last week, which all watched.
Yep.
Three episodes tonight, I think.
Oh, seriously?
Yes.
Oh, that's wild.
I mean, good.
That's cool because I think we all liked it.
Yeah. We all liked it. But it is a weird schedule. It's like they released two episodes, and that's a good idea.
Yes.
But then I think they're releasing three, like, tonight.
That's bonkers.
It is bonkers.
But yeah, I'm pretty down with it. This is on some level, I feel like an animated show that's influenced by the Spider-Verse stuff, but also kind of its own thing.
But also the MCU, for sure.
Oh,
the MCU.
Yeah. So it's another Spider-Man story where they're like, we're not going to do the origin again.
Yes.
There is a sort of alternate origin thing that happens in this, surprisingly different.
Yep.
And I assume we're going to be talking spoilers. Just if you haven't seen it, we all recommend it. Go watch it. Give it a shot. It's got CG animation with cell shading over it that looks very, like, kind of retro art, like 60s, 70s art, 60s through 80s maybe. And I think, Nick, you agree with this, maybe Randy too. Specifically an artist we like, Javier Rodriguez.
Yeah, who did the history of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, he definitely has that
It reminded
vibe,
me
Dave.
Of his, and like especially their use of color at times in the intro and outro, I think.
It is... gorgeous.
It is, like, very cool looking. I think it might take some people... I've gathered a few people are like feel like it looks too flat or it's taken people a little bit to wrap their head around. But I think you want to... If you give this one a little time, I think you're going to be impressed by the animation.
Yeah, the thing I thought was kind of strange about it... There's a lot of things that were strange about it, but I really liked it. It does not raise the level of Spectacular Spider-Man, which to my mind is the best Spider-Man cartoon.
I think it's actually better than it.
No, you're wrong.
but if you want Grandpa Dad's Spider-Man, where it's all basically the same old.
I grew up on the 90s Spider-Man cartoon show, and that for the longest time was
That was Jerry Conway. I mean, for all it had some problems, it was based on Jerry Conway's stuff, which is some of the best Spider-Man.
Right, was Spectacular Spider-Man, was that... I was trying to remember if the art direction was by that guy who was one of the dudes who did, like, some of the Batman Animated Series comics and
stuff. Yes, I believe it was.
And I'm not going to remember his name, but
Was it Dave Bullock, I think?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. It was in that group, because he was in that group of Dave Bullock, Darwin Cook, and somebody else, and Carmen Stewart.
Yes.
When they were doing, like, a tour. And I can't remember who the guy is.
But it had a really good look to it. And what they did way back, mid-2000s?
Yeah, mid-2000s.
On Spectacular Spider-Man.
Early 2000s,
I think one of their really good ideas was to kind of bring together all the villains' origins in a way that we see other people kind of doing that sometimes now. But they were one of the first ones, I think, that really did it well.
I think you can agree with me, though, that the intro music to this show is 1,000 times better than the Spectacular Spider-Man.
No way, Spider-Man had a good
Spectacular
intro.
Spider-Man had a great theme song. But this one's a banger.
Is Spectacular Spider-Man one that was kind of like the pop punk?
Yeah.
One?
Yes.
Spectacular.
Yeah.
It's
a good one, but
Nick, why you want a dog on it?
Yeah, that was a great theme, Nick.
It was okay.
No, that was great.
This one has a hip hop.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
This is a great theme.
I really liked it. Yeah. Um, so So in the first episode, Randy said it's weird, and it is. Everything in this is a little bit more different than you would expect. So, for instance, I don't think we're going to particularly get a MJ storyline.
No, I don't think so.
That is not a thing. They have introduced other love interests and other ideas about how they want to do that, and they very deliberately seem to subvert a number of expectations.
Yep.
So the way things go is, first of all, the origin story occurs super differently.
Well, yeah. Peter shows up his first day at the science academy he's gotten
into. He's supposed to go to this really cool science high school.
And then Dr. Strange comes in from a portal fighting a Venom-looking symbiote.
Yep. And Peter Parker does not recognize him.
Nope.
So it seems like this universe, we know it has some heroes in it because we've seen Captain America in a photo and a few other things.
Yep.
So there's a suggestion like
Iron Man
kind of a little bobblehead type deal. Yeah.
I feel like
MCU type stuff is happening here, but for whatever reason, magic hasn't happened.
Yep.
And I think it will actually be an ongoing mystery that'll be revealed because Doctor Strange looks around and says something like, I'm not supposed to be here, or something like that.
Yep.
And then actually gets a pretty cool action sequence. Surprisingly, more than one that I would have guessed. And Peter is just trying to help rescue some people.
Yep.
So he's being a good kid, but he doesn't have powers yet.
Nope.
Strange exits, having gotten the symbiote, but a little spider comes through from this other universe, and we don't know if it's magic power, other dimensional. We don't know what its deal, but that's the spider that bites Pete.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I hadn't put this together yet.
Yep.
This means that Uncle Ben dies before he becomes Spider-Man.
Yep. That's why when this originally happened, it threw me. I thought it was meant to echo the bite, but it was like, oh, this is a magic bite that's going to have something to do with, like,
Ezekiel and stuff. But no, this is what gives him the powers.
It is where he gets the powers.
Yeah.
And I think the suggestion maybe here is that he is a kind of that good person without having to have had the trauma of letting Uncle Ben die.
Yeah.
Which is a slightly new take on it, original take.
Yeah.
They do mention it though, like he's like there. He and Aunt May are kind of. He's like, oh, things have been tough this last year since Ben left us or whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway, he was the person. One of the people he saves is Nico Minoru.
Yep.
Minoru.
Another nod to the magic side of the Marvel Universe.
Right. And for just in case you don't know that name immediately, that is from the Runaways, sometimes known as Sister Grimm, but that's a terrible name. So she's most people just call her Nico.
All the names of Runaways were terrible.
Yep. But a character who's seen some screen time in like some video games like Midnight Suns and stuff like that. But in this context, she's Pete's new best friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a kind of a goth looking chick who gets along with him. They're both smart kids, but notably they do have to and then it just jumps forward by like it's like 3 months later or something like that.
Yeah.
And they've moved to another school. I do think that somebody engineered the Doctor Strange thing. I think there's supposed to have been like the pivotal event, and he would have if he had gone to Midtown High or whatever, like. Things would have unfolded differently, and maybe it would have been the Spider-Man we knew.
Maybe.
But I think there's going to be a meta plot.
Well, there are strong echoes of the MCU here.
You told me about
When he catches the bus, that is a scene from Civil War. That's the first time we see him. And the bit where he notices the car and goes into the house and Norman Osborn is there, that is shot for shot what happens when Tony recruits him for Civil War.
Right.
So they're basically doing a thing where Norman Osborn is subbing in for Tony Stark. And I've heard rumors that this was supposed to be originally in the MCU, but they decided not to for whatever reason. I kind of like this. I would have liked it to have been the MCU, Tom Holland, Marvel, seeing what he was doing as Spider-Man outside of the movies.
So instead of having three big movie adventures, you could have some smaller TV adventures.
But as a side piece, this is interesting.
Yeah.
Like any good like Elseworlds, it takes what you know but turns on its head. And I think that's most of the fun.
Well, one of the examples of that, one of the things that I kind of like about this, maybe my favorite thing overall about it, is that it kind of undoes the usual expectations. So the supporting cast has changed up. A new Nico is like the new bestie.
There's no bully. Flash isn't bullying.
There's not a bully.
Instead, the guy who would have been his bully,
name?
Lonnie Lott.
Lonnie Lincoln,
which we'll come back around to in a minute. But he's, as Pete knows him in this, he's just a handsome black football player who's dating his crush. Who, with by the way, in this again, not MJ, but is in fact was a babysitter of his who's like a few grades higher than him, and he's still got a crush on. And And then he has to, when he gets teamed up in a lab with Lonnie...
Because Lonnie requests him.
And it turns out he's actually a smart kid with a little bit of an aptitude for science, and he's like doing good with he's like the quarterback, but he just kind of wants to diversify his options. And so he's also a pretty smart kid, and Pete has to reluctantly admit, oh, I kind of like this guy.
He's a good guy, and he brings like Pete and Nico into like a popular kid circles and all that. And there's it's very much they're not doing the bully thing, which I think is cool.
I think they decided to it's time to stop making like jocks out to be generic bullies.
Yeah.
And so I appreciated that. And there's actually one of the best sequences in it is one that shows a little glimpse of Lonnie's home life.
Yeah.
After he does a long walk home from school, and you know, you kind of assume that he might be a little more affluent, but instead his walk takes him out of the kind of relatively affluent neighborhood, I guess, of the school to increasingly worse streets to a cop is driving alongside him and flashes his lights kind of creepily. You hear like a car alarm going off somewhere and you see some kids who look like they might have robbed something just run across the street.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, he is in a rough neighborhood.
Yeah.
And then you see like he's got a good family though when he gets home. And the thing, of course, about Lonnie is that we know, comic readers will know, Randy.
He's Tombstone, right, Nick?
Yep. Yeah. Yes. That this is a person destined to become, presumably, or unless maybe they change it up, some stripe of Tombstone.
And that is one of the things I really liked. Every time I got a name, I kind of Google it when I see these kind of things.
Well, I recognize this in the second episode immediately, the professor.
I didn't recognize him.
I didn't.
Oh.
Because,
the jerky one?
I don't know that guy's name.
Oh, really?
And so it's the wizard from Fantastic Four.
Yep.
But also, the people who are his cohorts in the...
Amadeus Cho.
He goes into this internship at Oscorp. Yeah.
Yeah. Amadeus Cho is one of them. There's a girl from Wakanda. And there's a girl who is one of the Avengers Academy characters.
Oh, is it? Yeah. I didn't recognize her.
Yeah. She was...
All of them in this are just presented, like, if you don't know who any of those characters are, all you'll know is that these are, like, the gifted and talented kids.
Yeah.
And we don't quite know what directions they'll go with them, but they do have a pedigree from the comics.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Finesse?
Finesse, yeah.
That's Taskmaster's daughter?
Right.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting.
And
okay.
Pearl, his love interest, she is one of the first Filipino hero named Wave.
Yeah,
so right.
So, I don't know if they're just using these characters or if they're going to all have powers. Who knows?
But they also introduce Carla Connors.
Gender
flip Kurt Connors the lizard.
Liked her a lot.
Yeah.
And like I will say throughout, like there's a lot of fun dialogue in here.
Yeah, it's great.
He runs afoul of an arsonist who doesn't know how to use maps.
Yeah, hilarious. This guy's supposed to like torch a city block for like, you know, like some sort of insurance scam.
Yeah.
He's like on the wrong street.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was an actual existing character.
Is he?
Butane. I had to look it up, but he's created by Alan Davis.
Okay.
He was in Excalibur.
Oh.
Of all things.
Huh.
Man, they're pulling some deep cuts.
From weird places.
What's interesting is that, you know, they seem to be using these characters, but, like, I don't know that, you know, I'm betting their version of Butane is not particularly close to his. I feel like there's, like, a certain freshness to this Spider-Man, which also does, by the way, have some of the influence of the Spider-Verse, because there is kind of a little bit more of a pop and hip-hop soundtrack to the whole thing, which is all, I think, really good stuff.
I also love that Peter's funny.
Like, The
lines he gets to do are good. It felt like Peter.
By the way, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but the actor famously came out and was like, I was afraid it was going to be a bunch of woke garbage, but instead it's really fun. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Did he watch the show?
Like, this show is very woke in a great way. Like, he's the only white character.
He is right that it's good.
Yes.
He was right about that.
But what a weird take.
Was it you or who was saying that they thought that like he might have almost been put out there to cushion that?
Yeah, maybe so.
Like by him saying that, then people got like they're like, oh yeah, let's go see this super or let's go see it because it's not woke.
Yeah.
Or they would think, well, in fact, it is.
Yeah, maybe you took one for the team.
Or people would watch it to like just be curious to see it, you know, because of the hype. But yes. Hilariously, it is woke, but good woke.
Yeah, it's great.
Like, I have to say, I do understand, at least to some degree, when something is pandering or just used to kind of, like, tick a box or something like that, that's lame.
Sure.
I didn't really get that vibe from this.
Nope. This is just good storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not, like, drawing attention to this stuff. It's pretty clear to me that Nico is gay in it, but, you know... the way it came out was she's like, hey, Pete, you better go after your girlfriend before somebody else gets her. And I think it's some, she's like, you never know. I might go after her. And Pete's like, wait, are you kidding? and it's just a minor thing in there.
Well, you were telling me off mic that the comic is kind of like,
oh,
fits,
yeah,
definitely into this. Like,
yeah,
they're telling things that the show are not.
Right. Anybody who's watched this, and wants a little bit more, the comic that's the spinoff of it is only 2 issues in, just like the show is 2 episodes in right now. Mm-hmm. I would recommend giving it a look. Just as a quick example, in the first issue of the comic, Peter and Nico go back to the high school after the strange appearance of Dr. Strange to investigate it that very night, and run into some interesting stuff, and his powers first start manifesting and stuff. It's something the cartoon doesn't show you. They want to move forward, and I like that they moved forward. Yeah. But it was it sets off like a cool side mission, I guess I'd say.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing more of it.
I guess 3 more episodes more in a, yeah, tonight.
I am pretty sure that's the case. Yeah. All right, that'll wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.